Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Chad Ackerman from Left Field Investors. Hi, Chad.
Hey, Big Mike, good to see you again. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for coming on a podcast. Chad is a founder and a chief operating officer of the Left Field Investors. It's a great community for investors who are looking for due diligence, to do combined collective due diligence before they write a check into many commercial and other deals. So tell us a little bit about Chad, you, your family, where you live, and then we go about Left Field Investors. What's the mission, how it works, and all that stuff.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, thanks for having me on, Chad Ackerman. I'm based out of Columbus, Ohio, and it's where four of us, six founders are located from Left Field Investors. I was a career W-2 guy. I was in human resources most of my career. Compensation was my focus, and mostly on sales compensation plans. So a lot of analytical work, a lot of, analysis, spreadsheets, all those kind of things were my friends. So that's what helped me translate into the investing world that I live in today. But I got started in the investing side because I changed jobs. I ended up with a lot of dashboard time. And a friend of mine at work said that she was looking for more income streams and talked about real estate investing. And I thought, well, that sounds really interesting. I got this time in the car. I'll start listening to podcasts. And podcasts led to books, and books led to a lot of analysis. And I was chasing a ton of shiny objects, trying to figure out how I could scale and grow and what really interested me, and couldn't find my thing. And I struggled through looking at items for years and found a local meetup group that did active investing discussions. And the fourth session I went to, the speaker happened to be talking about passive investing and how he left his W-2 by passive investing. And after I heard him, that was kind of the switch that flipped for me of like, that's the shiny object I've been looking for. Of, I was still in my W-2. It was a means for me to invest in real estate, which I loved, but I didn't have to deal with tenants and termites and all the T's that the active side does. So it clicked with me, and I liked it a lot. I invested in a couple things, started in 2019 with my first investments, liked it. I actually liquidated my 401k and I took the penalties, paid the tax, and moved it all over because I thought I was young enough. I could do more with that money in real estate than I could waiting 15 more years until I turned 65, to start using it tax-free or penalty-free, I should say. Now, I didn't know in 2019 that, you know, the economy would go haywire today, but I'm still pleased with my decision to do that. But all of that led to a group of us from that local meetup trying to start a community to talk about passive investing. And from there, Left Field was born, really, to be honest with you. But I'll pause there just to give a break.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a wonderful journey, right? And it's a journey I can relate to. I had a similar journey in the technology world. One day you wake up and you just want to go and you enjoy passive investments on the way, and then one day you want to go active. So how did you connect with other co-founders? In other words, to start a business with other folks, you have to be very, very happy, comfortable with your partners.
Yeah.
So how did you pick your partners, or was it the natural decision? All of you and you guys already knew each other. Just curious.
A little bit of all that. That speaker that I referred to that talked about passive investing is one of the partners. His name's Jim Pfeiffer. He was running that local meetup. Honestly, majority of the founders we met through that local meetup. So we had been together talking about real estate investing and so forth. Jim and a couple others started sparking the idea of doing a spinoff community to talk about passive investing, because the community we were in was very active. And I raised my hand. After that meeting, I met with Jim and introduced myself and found out we live in the same suburb of town. So we got together for a beer afterwards. a couple weeks later and started talking about our excitement around this. And it just organically spiraled from there. And in our intent, we just wanted to build a local meetup and have 10 or 12 people that were passively investing to get like-minded people together to share stories and kind of vet deals and talk about operators and the economy and how it's affecting it. So it all started that way. Our very first meeting that we were going to hold was supposed to be March 18th of 2020. The world shut down on March 15th of 2020 and put us on Zoom like we're doing today. And that's really where Left Field took off then. It organically grew because we knew others that weren't local that we could invite to be part of this community, or this networking is really what it was about, networking and education. And then it grew from there with word of mouth mostly, to where now Left Field Investors has over 2,000 people in their community. And we've had capital raised through us. We aren't capital raisers, but money invested from the Left Field community is up over $50 million over the last year and a half, 2 years. So it's really grown into this larger organization, bigger than we had plans when we started out. This was a hobby that we wanted to selfishly become better investors ourselves. And instead it grew into this business that we could help a lot of other people. And we've hosted a couple of local meetups, and I can't get over when people come up to me and tell me that I've helped change their lives with what we built and what we've done. That it just gave them a place to go find people that were like-minded, that could share stories with and help them understand the business better and make better decisions. So it's been a great journey by itself, let alone what I've been through too. But it's been fun.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I appreciate your great details. So sometimes great communities or great businesses are born with a small idea, and kind of, I guess, COVID disrupted you, and at the same time gave you a boost. But absolutely, Let's talk a little bit more about how the community functions, because mm-hmm. It's a very powerful community. We certainly are part of many passive investor communities. And to me, again, as a fund manager and a podcaster, communities like yours are a great friend. So we absolutely love interacting and working within the community like yours, because it's difficult to find many like-minded investors, passive investors who are focused on good due diligence, deep due diligence, finding the right folks to invest with, and then ultimately writing a check. Yeah. So how does the community work? How do you bring in, let's just call them, the movers and shakers, the funds or the operators or folks who do deals or have funds? And how do you do the due diligence on them? Or is it a collective due diligence by many members versus, you hire a third party special firm that does due diligence, which I don't think you're doing. It would be correct. Very complicated. You would be now in the investment banking business. It'd be a very different environment where folks have to do their own due diligence. Just curious, just tell us a little bit about how the community functions.
Yeah, no, great question. We definitely designed Left Field Investors to be a do-it-yourself kind of community for the limited partner investor. So we built it with the limited partner investor in mind. We built it how we would like to see a community operate, that it's there. We as founders are not, we disclaim this everywhere. We don't vet operators. We don't vet deals. We play more of a middleman role, almost, is how I like to describe it, that we have a community of limited partner investors that are looking for information. We meet new operators, veteran operators every day. We have a group of preferred partners, as we call them, that are operators that we really like to work with. But we don't vet those operators. We tell the community, do it yourself. Here are some tools to help you vet, but it's on you. We aren't doing any kind of advising around this, which really gives us a lot of freedom, a lot of flexibility to bring anybody into the community, as long as the operator didn't seem like they would be a fraud or, you know, something we wouldn't want to introduce to the community. It really opens the door. And then what has happened, again, organically inside the community, is there is community vetting that goes on around deals and operators. We have a forum, and in the forum, there's a lot of chatter around operators, deals, the economy, what's next, what life insurance, you name it, tools, whatever it is, that helps educate the fellow limited partner that's in the community on making decisions around themselves. We've always said because we aren't capital raisers, we don't really know what our LPs are looking for. We aren't financial advisors for them. So we don't know that they want a self-storage unit in Indianapolis. You know, we don't have any specifics like that. So I view our job as leaders of Left Field is to bring as much diversity to the crowd so that they can pick and choose what they do want to get involved in. So I love finding new operators, new asset classes that we can introduce because we don't know who's trying to round out their portfolio with something different that we could find for them or help find for them and bring in to let them vet, decide for themselves what they want to do. And then while we're bringing in those new operators and new asset classes, we get a lot of experienced, tried and true, well-known, liked and trusted operators that come in as well when they have a new fund or a new asset available. So we get this mix of maybe people you haven't heard of and then the hitters that you have, by all means.
Yeah, I appreciate the explanation. Most of communities similar to yours, they're focused on networking and education, right? Ultimately, that's what you do. You're not investment vetting and investment advice business is a very dangerous business and very difficult business. And people who play in that space is very different from most of, you know, you need great expertise and this potential liability and responsibility related to picking and choosing kind of people who come into the community or not. But at the same time, you got to be gatekeepers because there are shysters and idiots out there. I've talked about this many times on my podcast, et cetera. There are great operators, honest operators. Sometimes the market is tough. Like you said, you started the whole conversation. This market beaten up some of the great operators. It's unfortunate and difficult when the Fed hiked rate. They're hurting a lot of commercial deals. But those folks are good and legit. And there are out there comedians who are just trying to take advantage of communities. And you have to have reasonable, I don't know, call it vetting process, at least had to decide who is worth introducing to the community or not. So I don't know, any quick comments on this? And then the other quick question is, what kind of tools do you give investors to help do collective vetting or, because it's a lot of these folks are non-professionals. Right. So you can educate them best practices, but it's difficult for one individual to do all the due diligence. Just curious, what tools, how do you give them, how do you help them?
Well, in the biggest asset I think we offer the limited partner is the forum itself, actually, because you have veterans in there that have been doing this for years. You have newer people. I love the newer investors that are in here because they ask the questions that a lot of people won't ask because they're kind of feel like they should know the answer already. So that to me is always the biggest place I point limited partner members of our community towards is go in, ask the questions, get the feedback, and you know, make your decisions off of that. But beyond that, we do offer some tools. We have a list of sponsors to help people get started of just here are, I think there's about 50 or so operators that we have on a list just to give them names and numbers to start out with and what asset classes they're in, what their fee structures are like, how long they've been in the business, something to give them. It's a big, open, vast, scary area when you first walk into it. So we wanted to give them some place to start. And then we also have a tool that is a list of our top questions that we've come up with to ask a operator to vet about their deal, about themselves, about their business, reach out to resources or references from them and questions for those. So we give you a list of questions as well to help you know what to talk to an operator about. And then we also have a deal analyzer tool that we built that you can plug in information from the PPM and the marketing material. And we have suggested ranges that these items, these metrics ought to fit into. And we flag things that spark outside of our recommended ranges, not to say that you shouldn't invest in that deal, but it gives you good conversation to have with the operator then to say, hey, I've been told that these fees are usually in this range and yours is outside of. Why is that? Can you explain it? And that helps vet the operator a little bit more as well to see how they respond to that kind of question. So that tool kind of gives you a in range, out of range, and then gives you questions to ask. And then the final tool, we just rolled this out actually in the last month or so. We built kind of a, call it a Yelp for sponsors, to allow our members to rate and summarize feedback on sponsors, to help people kind of look at who's well thought of in the community, who's got good ratings. There's four or five different questions that we ask, that we ask them to star 1 through 5 on. And then there's a free form section where you could type a message about them, that is just rolled out, but is getting great feedback on it. We've been trying to get to this for a couple years. So we're excited that it's finally coming to fruition and getting out there. Now we just got to get people in to populate it, so we've got some good feedback in there. But all of those we built to try to help that limited partner look at a deal, look at an operator, and judge whether they want to make that decision or not.
Thank you, Chad. Yeah, I'll just say a couple of comments on what you just described. So the Yelp is pretty cool. Just listening to this.
Yeah.
It just needs to be also what I call it, hopefully a little bit dynamic. My wife is an optometrist, and I've seen funny comments from non-patients. We've actually seen this.
Oh,
it's crazy how people come in and they don't like you, or they want to put a bad mark on you. And we've had these discussions, and you try to remove a Google review or a Yelp review, and it's hard.
Good luck.
So my feedback to you, just make sure you have a good mechanism.
We do.
If a rating comes in, you have an opportunity for the sponsor to respond and understand what's happening.
Exactly.
Obviously, 5 stars is wonderful. When you get a 1 star, was it somebody who had a bad day, just have nothing better to do than a rough review?
Yeah, we do put a pause on anything that is submitted so we can review it first to kind of eyeball, is this an outlier? Does this feel like it's not really on par? And we also require that there are 3 reviews available, written about an operator, before we release any of that information for the public. So we can kind of watch that it's not just a one-off saying nasty things, trying to slander somebody. We kind of built some tools around trying to prevent that from happening, but it's good feedback. I thank you for that.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. And the other really important would be help. I mean, it's very difficult if it's purely tech business, but if it's a relational business, definitely reach out to the operator and say, hey, somebody is saying you guys didn't take care of the business. Give them a chance at least to respond. It's very important. I know if you're trying to do purely technology solution, it's one thing, but if it's a more relational community, like, you got to have the interaction. And then the other quick comment I had, I really like that you guys have. Years ago, I wrote a book, Top 10 Questions to Ask Before Investing into Any Fund and Syndication. It's still available on Amazon. And when you have, it's basically a tools, set of questions that folks should be asking. And it sounds like you develop this into much more. This was a 30-page pamphlet that I produced years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you could ask probably I'm going to call it 200 questions, but take 10 into 30 questions. And giving these ranges is a wonderful idea, because at least you're giving them a framework.
Yeah.
These type of fees are within reason. This is looks way too high, and this is too low. And in the wild west of sponsors and operators, there are folks out there that give investors 10% pref and keep 90% of the upside. Like, it's not 90-10 split, it's 10-90 split. I'm using this as an extreme example.
Right.
So you got to give them some ranges. Listen, 8 pref with 70-30 over 8 is reasonable. If you have the reverse, why is it in this direction? Who is taking the risk? Who is getting the reward? So basic common sense like this is very powerful, because ultimately, I can tell you this, as a fund manager, we operate funds. We believe in institutional quality terms and institutional quality waterfall. But when you have communities that folks that make it look pretty and they have what I call the mom and pop terms, they're not being fair to investors. So educated, empowered investors, what we want, because successful, ultimately, the good shops will get their attention sooner or later. And then let's just call them mom and pop or fly-by or not good operators, ultimately will kind of just disappear. So having a community with the right tools is hugely helpful. That's my quick comment.
Absolutely. Now, and we encourage people to be a part of multiple communities. By all means, the more information you can get, the better decisions you're going to make. We have a community we think is doing pretty well, but we know there are other communities that are very valuable out there as well, that we tell people all the time, don't just join one, join multiple, because you're going to gain that much more knowledge out of all that info share that's out there. But hopefully what we've built is worthwhile to people as they go through as well.
Well, I'll tell you this. There are a number of communities, but this finite number of hours and minutes. And,
agreed.
Folks, yep. If they get to like and trust your community, just like there are bigger pockets, there are other private forums, 506 group, et cetera, and mm-hmm. your community, mm-hmm. You wind up working within whatever community fits you most. That's kind of my observation.
I do think we've built a culture that people seem to gravitate towards more than some of those other communities, which we're very proud of. I think it's because of how we created Left Field, that it was a hobby with trying to be a local chapter meetup kind of thing. And it grew into this business that we protected the culture as we built the business because we knew that was valuable. It was valuable to us. So I think that gives us a little different feel, which I think a lot of people respond well to. But it's, yeah, I mean, to your point, you may join multiple, but you're going to find what you like in any one of them and gravitate towards one of them more than the others probably. But, you know, we're here for people that want to learn. That's what we were all about, trying to just become better LP investors ourselves.
Yeah, makes sense. I have a couple of quick questions. And of course, sure. You don't go in those territories, but I mean, we do this all day long as fund managers. We try to get bigger checks and negotiate better terms. Do you do any of that, which is difficult because at the moment you go into that, you have to be careful not to step into investment advice or aggregation yeah. business. But of course, you have community strength in numbers. Somehow, if you say, hey, here's 10, 20 people, they're all interested. Can you do something for the community that will improve? Again, this is simply the power of a bigger check as a community.
Yeah, we really have left that to the operator. We've suggested it frequently to newer operators that come in. We have some veteran operators that we've worked with for 2 or 3 years now. They have that standard in their policy. There's a threshold that if everybody that from Left Field mentions they're with Left Field when they invest, then we achieve a certain threshold. We may get, you know, a better split, a better pref, whatever it is. But we don't ask for it up front. We kind of leave it to the operator, especially in this economy. It's been a lot harder for concessions to be given like that, I feel like. But at the same time, I think operators are looking harder and harder for money because I don't think investors are spending as much. So we're very open to it. We've had that in many cases. We do look for that buying power benefit if we can get it, but we don't push it to the operators. We generally ask about it. Hey, are you going to offer any benefits to Left Field for a certain threshold? Some will, some won't. And I'd say now it's probably around 50% of the time that we're getting concessions this day and age.
Yeah, I appreciate it. A couple other quick questions and then mm-hmm. kind of. So one question, I am not familiar with the term Left Field. So why Left Field investors? Well, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming it's a baseball field. So what's in the left field that's not in the right field?
It's a great question. So we are not baseball fans. I hate to ruin it for anybody listening, but we are not baseball fans, actually. Left Field to us came from when we were active investors and in our W-2s and looking at this space, we would talk to our financial advisors about this and they would tell us to shy away, mostly because they weren't getting commissions for this. But they would say, oh, you don't want to invest your money in real estate like that. That's out in left field. It's a risk. There's, you know, not a lot of people do that. So it's that slang term of it's coming out of left field that we love that idea that, you know what, we're going to make this work. So we adopted the name and we use a lot of baseball themes in our community, even though we aren't baseball fans, but technically left field came from that kind of a comment from our financial advisors thinking we were crazy to be doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I just want to acknowledge and appreciate you and other communities who do this. Because some folks call it anti-Wall Street. The yeah. truth of the matter is exactly what you said. These investment advisors, they get compensated to sell yeah. Wall Street products. So the yeah. moment you go outside of what they make commissions on, they have no economic incentives. Of course, they don't talk the talk. They walk the walk. Let me put it this way. What is it called? There's a bias that makes folks like things that they are economically beneficial to them. And that's yeah. essentially what happens.
Yeah.
And being in the left field community, I guess, you're on your own. You have to do a lot of the work with these unvetted or maybe somewhat vetted operators. But the potential is you could reap the benefits that the Wall Street is not offering. It's a very different philosophy.
Well, it's comical to us almost because it's called alternative investing, but real estate investing dates back way further than Wall Street does. So it's actually the original investing is the way we view it. So we're just trying to shine a light on that there are other ways of growing your wealth outside of Wall Street that are safe. They have the risk like anything does. Wall Street has its risk too, but it's an area that there just isn't a lot of education on. And so we wanted to build what we could to share that little bit of education that we understood to gain, you know, get people interested in and help them learn more anyway.
That's great wisdom. Real estate investment was there way before Wall Street. That is the
that's right.
That's the truth, right? That's been around way longer before Wall Street was started.
Right.
Another very quick question. So we are living in very dynamic times. And I just, probably one of the last questions and then we got to move on.
Sure.
It's a dynamic environment. For years, real estate has been stable, predictable, steady, and a great investment. Then the Fed went wild in the fight of inflation. We've been destabilized. So it's kind of a very dynamic times and uncertain times, uncomfortable times. So what are you doing to educate investors to better understand what has transpired? What's kind of for sale? For example, a lot of commercial real estate, certain type of deals, assets trading at a discount versus something else, maybe trading at a full price. Again, I like to call it this been everything rally. Wall Street, Bitcoin, gold. And again, I'm not saying anything negative about those things. They can go up and up and up until, you know, there's no end sight. But at the same time, certain opportunities in real estate look a lot more attractive on a risk-adjusted basis. I'm curious if you're doing any of that education, because if you are teaching folks, you can go outside of Wall Street. You have to really let folks know that the stock market has done so well. Now is the time to potentially consider diversifying outside of it for the reasons that it's so overpriced in some ways that you may have better bargains and better opportunities in certain sectors of real estate. Just curious.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we coach on this day and age, because a lot of people are hesitant, a lot of people are scared, holding cash, waiting to see what happens, which I totally understand and can respect. We coach that if that's the case, if that's your strategy, now's the time to educate yourself. Now spend more time talking to operators that you're either already invested with to learn more about how they're managing the current strategies. You really can't do a lot with the investments you're in already. You're kind of locked in, but understand how they're trying to manage it and what their next is going to be, what their options are if things continue to be difficult. So you're prepared and you know what to do, but educate on what their next steps are. Is this somebody you're going to want to continue to invest with because they're weathering the storm? They're making good investment decisions right now. And then go out and meet new operators that maybe you haven't had the time to talk to as well to build that bench strength. Have that next one or two operator that you're feeling comfortable with. Take advantage of that time that you're maybe not investing in deals, but invest in your education is what we're really steering people towards these days. But from a deal perspective, pref equity is still getting, I know you and I talked about this on our podcast, pref equity is getting a ton of attention, which I think is smart, on that shorter term, higher in the capital stack, a little more protected money, if you will. None of it is, but a little more secure kind of investment. That seems to be catching a lot of attention in our community, that we tell people, look into this, study this area, learn more about pref equity, this rescue money, and take a look at this space because it has a lot of validity right now, and take advantage of it in this economy because it's not going to be here forever, but it's also a little more secure than jumping in with a new operator that you maybe don't know, that doesn't know how to do the work as much, that gives you a space if you have an operator that knows what they're doing with pref equity too. Do your vetting, do your due diligence. But those are kind of the two big things that we seem to be steering people towards outside of, look at where you might want to store cash. If you want to store cash that is still fairly liquid, but maybe is getting you somewhat of a return, you know, more than your savings account, if you will.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Chad. A lot of great wisdoms. I have this expression you have spoken many times. So you are encouraging folks to learn from their own investment. Which is very important. I love to ask this question. Are you learning to invest and investing to learn?
Yeah.
Hopefully both, all the both. Time, right?
Yeah,
because
that's fair.
you've invested, now you got to learn from your experience. And then before you make the next investment, you better learn first and then make the investment. So that is a continuous journey on both fronts. Yeah, I agree with you on preferred equity mass financing. That's the hottest thing today. It's the best opportunity.
Yeah.
And also what's really important, I look at the past all the time. And past really tells you, of course, a story. Sometimes it's a wonderful book or a wonderful story. But what's the most important thing is to be able to look into the future. And you're not in the game of predicting or projecting or crystal ball type of an exercise, right?
Right, right.
It's more of a, what lessons can you learn from the past to be able to make your investments better in the future? And of course, many of us learn the very basic lessons of better diversification, better risk mitigation, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll make this one comment and one final thought, and then you can just tell folks how to reach out.
Sure.
Sometimes you go through experience that's difficult and painful, and you immediately respond by saying, well, I took all this risk when the risk was, when the environment was very risk friendly, but not really anticipating the black swan events and not really pricing in the risk properly.
Yeah.
And then now it's the reverse, right? The risk, people are afraid of the risk. They're fearful of the risk and they're shying away from the risk because they lost some money on the deals that had higher risk.
Yeah.
So my message to everyone is to consider, sometimes the pendulum swings all the way the other way. And we may be missing on great opportunities with phenomenal risk-adjusted return when you are completely risk averse just because you took risk somewhere and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
learning from the experience not to go through extremes. But what's final two questions. You have a great book recommendation. And how would folks reach out? What's the best way to get a hold of you or just learn more about Left Field Investors?
Sure. So one of our founders actually wrote a book for the community. It's called Avoiding Rookie Errors, Investing with Left Field Investors. It's his lessons learned book that he wrote over lessons he's learned over the last 14 years that he's been doing investing. It's great. It's a quick book. It's a quick read. It's short. But it's a great little read just to give people food for thought of things they ought to watch for as they're getting into this space. Forgive me. I forgot what you asked.
The next question, how do folks reach out to you?
Contact. Yes.
Leftfieldinvestors.com or what's the website?
Yeah. Leftfieldinvestors.com will work, or you can email me at chad@leftfieldinvestors.com as well. Both will work.
Chad, it's been awesome to have you. Appreciate your wisdom. Appreciate your sharing. I think it's going to be an awesome episode and love the progress Left Field is making. I'm a big fan and you guys rock and roll.
Thank you. No, this was great. I really enjoyed talking to you again. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.